Welcome to the Rheology Podcast. I'm Brandon, and welcome to a brand new series called Life. Hosted by Chris and Tyler, this series is all about people who've lived life in a love relationship with God. You'll hear stories of struggle, reconciliation, joy, and discovery. All will be true life stories from people who are learning to navigate this life with Jesus as their shepherd. Today, for the first episode, Chris and Tyler will chat with Scott Johnson, the founder of Rheology, to hear his story of rediscovery, a narrative that involves the three steps of birth of a dream, death of a dream, and the resurrection of a dream. Scott has experienced his fair share of ups and downs during his journey, a story of leaving full-time ministry, struggling with identity, and then experiencing a fulfilling relationship with God. For today's episode, part one, we'll hear Scott walk us through what he's described as a wilderness season over the past couple of years and what he's learned from it. We hope you enjoy this episode. This is episode one.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode one of this new series we're doing about life, in each other's life, what's going on, some things that we've talked about in the past. And today we are talking with Scott Johnson. Hey Scott.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good, man.
Yeah.
How are you guys?
We're doing all right.
Good.
Yesterday was Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to everybody.
All the fathers out there.
So I think the goal of today and probably a couple more episodes is you've described to Chris and I over the past couple of years, you've been walking through this wilderness when it comes to your relationship with God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also the founding and the future of what Rheology could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be worth it to just have that conversation and allow you to walk us through what that's been like, and we'll ask you questions.
Okay.
And everything that has to do in and around you discovering the things that you've discovered.
Okay.
So where do you think we should start when it comes to this process of, or entering into the wilderness?
I think going back to the beginning would probably be the better, because in order to get like, you know, it's like, it really is a narrative. It's like a story. So there's a beginning, there's a middle, and then there's an end.
Right.
I always think of like Star Wars is, if you think of Star Wars is, or any like good trilogy, they all actually follow the same pattern, which is interesting.
Okay.
So yeah, at the very first, you have the introduction of the hero. The second part, you have the conflict. And the third, you have the resolution. So it probably would be best to go back to the beginning and, let me say that there was a guy who is a part of my life, about 15 years ago. His name is Matt McGew. And Matt told me about this process then. That was the first time I'd ever heard of it. And here I was in ministry, and I was probably in ministry at that point. Like, that was maybe my 12th year of ministry. But anyway, so he tells me that same kind of three-part process as the birth of a dream.
Mm-hmm.
The death of a dream, and then the resurrection of a dream. And that this is not just a humanity process that humans go through, I mean, which it is, but it's a process that God uses and God created that is just a part of humanity. So okay. It's not just part of humanity because we're humans and just it's right. A natural thing. It was a created thing for humanity to go through. And there's a purpose behind it. So for me, so if we're going to talk about like that first step of the process, which is birth of a dream, it's everybody who, you know, gets born into the world and starts working towards like, what are you going to be? What are you going to do?
Okay.
So like, it's interesting in our world now versus when I went to like school and high school and stuff like that. Like I can remember when Anna Grace, our oldest, went through middle school, and like when we moved down to this part in Burbank, sorry, Burbank. when we moved down here, then she re-registered for sixth grade. We had like a little open house kind of deal.
Yeah.
And we talked to like some of the teachers and met her counselor, and our counselor said in sixth grade, so what do you want to do with your life?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're asking a 13-year-old what she wants to do with her life? I didn't even know what I wanted to do with my life at that point. So still a little fuzzy. But anyway, So that's the way our society is kind of like geared, right? Mm-hmm. Especially right now, mm-hmm. is like figuring out what do you want to do. And we relate what you do with your identity, who
Correct.
You are.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And so that's like the first step of the birth of a dream. The birth of a dream is just trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to do and relating that with who you are.
Okay.
And that's the dream.
Okay.
So for me, I grew up always drawing cartoons and was an artist and wanted to pursue that. I remember talking with my mom like really early on in like grade school, probably fourth, fifth grade, of this idea of wanting to be like a Disney animator. Mm-hmm. I thought that would be like super, super cool, working for a cool company like Disney. And so we started kind of like looking into in my life, that's where I was kind of going. But I came from a broken family and my parents divorced when I was 10. I didn't have much relationship with my dad. And so it was pretty much, and I have two older brothers that are 7 and 9 years older than me. So, you know, mm-hmm. at some point they're out of the house. Mm-hmm. And then it's just me and my mom. And we moved into our first house. We lived in an apartment after the divorce. We moved into our first house. And it happened to be across the street from a family. And I got to know them very well. Their oldest son became one of my best friends. And he was the first person that really had the guts to like start talking to me about Jesus. Mm. And I always say, and he and I always joke about it, I was like, it's really weird because he is 3 years younger than me. So he started talking to me when I was 15. Hmm. So he would have been 12. Hmm. It's like, what 12-year-old goes and like has yeah. the guts to go yeah. and talk to their buddy about Jesus. So,
was that weird for you? That those initial conversations about Jesus?
Not really. Okay. I knew that early on, I knew that there was something different about their family okay. because their family didn't function the way my family did.
Did you ever go to church before that?
Yeah, okay. I went to church okay. A little bit with my mom. My mom was involved in a Baptist church. This was before the divorce, and she loved it. And I went with her. My brothers were baptized in that Baptist church.
So you knew.
So I was familiar with church and stuff, and we had gone to like VBS at another church. Mm-hmm. But we weren't like super churched by any stretch of the imagination. So I knew that something was different. And then I knew that they went to church. And he would talk to me about summer camp and church camp and all that kind of stuff and how much fun they'd had and whatnot. But I think the weird thing is when I talk about, his name is Derek Willoughby. His approach, even though it's like theologically wrong, that's what we talk about in here. Like you don't really go to heaven, right? Or you don't go to hell yeah. kind of a deal. It's like the question. So, but that's how he posed it to me. If you, you know, hypothetically, if you died today,
a 12-year-old
yeah.
is saying this to you.
Yeah. If you died today, would you say,
yeah.
did you go to heaven or did you go to hell? Yeah. And like, nobody says, yeah, I'll probably go to hell. And everybody says, I'll go to heaven. And he said, why? And you know, I can't imagine that he was at home creating a strategy at 12. I just think that's just kind of just, that's what came out. Yeah. But the funny thing is like looking back at it, it's exactly the approach that I needed because from a very young age, I was always a very inquisitive, researching kind of kid. I wanted to figure it out. And so I had like some, the old school Living Bible from one of the VBSs that I went to. And I opened it up and I started in Matthew because that's the first book of the New Testament. I started there and I started reading. And oddly enough, at 15, I started like seeing like a theme of like love, 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 love. And I knew that that's kind of what was not necessarily missing in my life, but you know, our family was not founded on love. Mm-hmm. Derek's family was. And so all these pieces just kind of started like really kind of connecting for me. And so I started going to church with him. And through that, I found like, I just loved the youth group. I loved these people. I loved my youth minister was like cool. He was awesome. And then, you know, after doing that for a couple of years, maybe probably even just 1 year, I started like thinking, man, this guy gets paid to do this, you know, and we go on trips to like amusement parks and camps and retreats and stuff. He's getting paid to do this. It's like, this is really cool. So I started asking him about, you know, how do you become a youth minister?
What did you like say yes to Jesus in
before
you started asking questions about ministry?
No. Yeah. Okay. So probably it probably took me about 5 months of going to youth group stuff. My youth minister started like, okay, you know, what are you doing? You know, I mean, it's cool if you just come and have fun, but you know, this is all kind of leading somewhere, you know, and you're reading and that's cool, but you're going to read that Jesus is actually, you know, extending his hand to you. There's an invitation into another world here, into a relationship. And he was very relationship based as well, which is good. It wasn't a turn and burn kind of a deal.
Okay.
So in April 20th of 1986, I was 16 years old. That shows my age right there. I was baptized.
Okay.
And, but you know, to me, that was like the sealing the deal kind of a deal. It's like, I totally believed, I totally got everything. I understand who God was. I understood what Jesus was about, you know, mostly. And for me, being baptized was like me signing the contract saying I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in. And so maybe that next like 6 months to a year, that's when I started really kind of looking at ministry.
Okay. Got it.
So then, went to Johnson Bible College, right out of high school.
So really after that moment, your path was, I'm going to be a youth minister.
That's it.
That was just, you were all in on that.
That was it. Okay. The going to Disney thing was gone.
Cause going to Johnson Bible College is specifically to be like, right. It's your future.
Yeah. It's all ministry. I mean, they have like now they're like a more of an open, liberal arts type of, they're actually a college. They provide other programs, but in that day, I mean, like the only programs that they had that were not ministry specific were like counseling, media, and secondary education.
Got it.
So most people went there to be a preacher or youth minister or associate minister or whatever. So that was it. That was it for me. And so, went to Johnson, came out of Johnson, immediately took like your first, like everybody does, takes their first job. And it was, you know, nothing like what I had experienced through internships. And, I had done a part-time internship while it was my last full senior year of school with a guy. Actually, probably 2 years with a guy there local, and he became one of my mentors, and he modeled a lot of like ministry to me, a lot of disciple making stuff that we talk about all the time. Not just like, I'm just going to go build a youth group and provide something for the kids to do. No, he was very purpose driven before the whole purpose driven stuff really kind of came about. So I learned a lot through him. And so my first ministry was in Terre Haute, Indiana, and it was just kind of a dumpster fire, really. So I didn't really live my best life there.
Okay.
I was micromanaged by a guy who had run off a couple of youth ministers, and it's like,
because you're also like what, 23?
God, yeah, man, 23.
Did you meet Robin in college too?
Yeah, she was.
Were you guys together then?
Yeah, she was. She came my last year. Mm-hmm. So she was. She's from Lexington, Kentucky. So she went to community college and then went to UK. University of Kentucky for a year or two. And then a friend of hers is like, you need to come here.
Because Scott's here.
There's a guy Scott's named
here.
Scott.
Yeah, you got to get here. Hurry, come now. So we met and just started hanging out and became friends and then started dating.
Okay.
Towards in late fall, early winter. But and then she had another year while I was in Terre Haute.
Got it.
So after my first full year at Terre Haute, she moved. And then we were there for maybe 4 or 5 months until another church called and said, hey, we got your name. Would you be interested? And it was in Northern Kentucky. And so went over there and I experienced my first, what I call Camelot experience, where everything just goes right.
Okay.
Just nothing goes wrong.
You call it Camelot?
Camelot.
What is that? I don't...
King Arthur, the realm of Camelot.
I don't know.
You've surely heard.
You understand that the idea of Camelot is like a utopia kind of a deal?
I had no idea.
You know now.
But you've heard the word Camelot before.
I have. Okay. I've never known what it meant or what it was in reference to.
Okay, okay.
Now I know.
So Camelot is like this mystical city that King Arthur created that's like near perfect. So utopian kind of a mentality where, I mean, honestly, I just couldn't do anything wrong. Even when I tried to do things wrong, people thought it was great.
Okay.
So, and it was in contrast with the guy that I was there with who was only a year older than me. And we really kind of buddied up, you know, and he couldn't do anything right. So, you know, I guess it's just kind of the things of like working with kids and stuff like that. People love you because you're working with their kids and whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was a great, wonderful ministry. And I was there for about 3 years and then went into another ministry and it was called again. By a guy I knew, growing up in our area. And we went down, it was in Atlanta area. We'd mentioned that. Yeah. So, and it was for the most part, pretty good. The ministry part was pretty good, but some of the surrounding stuff, leadership wise, there was some dysfunction going on in staff leadership and, so I just got to the point where I was like, I just didn't see a future. Mm. So Rob and I took maybe 6 months off where we moved back to Indiana. I lived in my hometown, was incredibly miserable for 6 months. Worked in a self-publishing company as a graphic designer, which I say that very loosely. Is mainly just doing corrections and stuff like that. Mm. And just seriously, just miserable. So I think it's one of those things where you know, it's like you don't really know what you got till it's gone kind of a deal. And it was gone and I really missed it.
Okay.
So
like, were you taking a break because you were just done with ministry? You thought you were done forever or?
I knew I wasn't done forever. I just needed to kind of get out of that situation because I was basically in a situation where the senior minister was doing he had some issues that needed to be addressed. And I felt like I got picked on for stupid little things. And he got away with like big stuff. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Mm. So, it was a fleeing kind of thing. I probably should have stuck it out and see what happens, but I did kind of bail. So, and that's a reoccurring thing too. So, shortly after that, I got called by, referred by another friend of this church in the Indianapolis area. And then I go up there and I established my second Camelot experience.
Okay.
Not that I couldn't do anything wrong. I still had conflict, but the ministry there was just rich. And the students were very open, very, very willing.
How old were you?
Brandon, our producer, was one of them.
Be wise.
Yeah.
How old were you at this time?
I moved up there in 2002. So I was 32 years old.
Okay.
We had Anna Grace was like maybe she was two, mm-hmm. three. She was three. So unfortunately, I was only there for a couple of years because I was really thinking that I really wanted to go into church planning, which I did. Mm-hmm. And then church planning is when we moved to Charlotte here, and everything went horribly wrong.
Why'd it go horribly wrong?
It went horribly wrong because, to kind of give some like context here, you know, youth ministry, and we've talked about this a lot, youth ministry, we bust on churches,
sure,
you know, for what they say, right? And maybe that's what they do. We typically don't really bust on youth ministry or student ministry whole lot because most of them are really into the lives of students a lot. Most of them are. So, and they're really trying to disciple. They may not do it very well, and some of them may do it really well. But our main goal everywhere I went was to make disciples, number one, and then to have those disciples become disciple makers as well.
Right.
So, like, I wasn't typically the youth minister that went and visited the high school and ate lunch with the students. Because I was always like, that's your mission field, not mine. Yep. I'm with you all the other time. And I'm gonna try to teach you and equip you to go, and that's your mission field. So I was definitely used to that, the purpose of, you know, not just creating an event, but creating a ministry that actually is trying to make disciples. So when I moved and so like in Fortville, we had a lot of adults start trying to like come and see what we were doing. You know, like, man, we need to do what you guys do in your student worship service, like down here in Big Church. Mm-hmm. And we even actually started a secondary or like a night service that was more along the lines, not completely, but it was more along the lines of kind of what we did. And so that to me was like, and I had other people saying like, hey man, go start a church. Cause you know, it's easier to give birth than to raise the dead. Mm. That was always the mentality, you know? So,
what's the raising of the dead in that?
So like trying to change a church, a dead church, versus just going and planting a new one. Yeah.
So people knew, oh, not your church that you were leading. They weren't like, hey, you should stay here and try to raise a dead.
Well, I mean, I think there definitely was that. Okay. There definitely was people saying like, because I was saying like, you know, people would come in and go, why can't we do that in Big Church? So there was like a little bit of a pressure to like, how can we need to be doing this, what you guys are doing. And, you know, it's not that easy, obviously, because it's like you have elders in youth ministry, elders like, yeah, it sounds good. Great. How many kids you got coming? Mm-hmm. 90 kids. Crap. You must be doing something great. And, you know, having no real clue what we do, but the rest of the church is like, oh, wait a minute, we can't do that. We're going to take this person off and take that person off. So it is easier to plant than it is to raise the dead. That's for sure. But it's not that easy. So church planting was kind of in the back of my mind for a while, even all the way through, you know, my experience in the Indianapolis area. And then someone contacted me and said, hey, why don't you come to this assessment? So I went through assessment, got involved in church planting, met the guy that was going to plant down here, met two dudes, actually. Matt McGee, as I mentioned, he was one. He launched over here in South Carolina area, Fort Mill area. And the other one was in the university area, which you guys know. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I knew very quickly on in being here, very quickly on, we were not going to try to make disciples. Not even close. And it was just going to be doing church with a different skin, a cool skin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't care about cool. I didn't really resonate with me at all. So from the very get-go, you know, and for me coming into church planning, my goal really was just to try to help. I just wanted to help because I didn't come in as, you know, a lead guy. I didn't come in as the worship guy. I didn't come in as a children's guy. I came in as a creative director, which most people even then were like going, what new church plant hires a creative director?
My gosh, cool ones.
Yeah. Cool ones do. The cool ones that don't realize it takes money to do that. Yep. And so within a year, the money ran out and now I was like, oh no, what now? So that's what led up to everything starting to like really break apart.
Okay.
But for me, you know, living the dream, you know, the birth of a dream, I was living that birth of the dream of what I felt like God was calling me to and having me. Honestly, I really thought that I was a lifer, like one of those guys, like you guys are in campus ministry. It's like one of those guys who are like 70 years old, still involved in campus ministry.
Yeah.
Or like a dude that's like 60 year old and he's still involved in youth ministry. Mm-hmm. I really did feel like I don't want to be a senior dude. I don't want to be an associate dude. I don't want to be anything but this. Mm-hmm. And I had actually gone from being a youth minister of all ages to just students, middle school and high school. And I was like, I am in the sweet spot here. So, you know, so when it came to, but after, you know, hitting your head up against walls and stuff like that, you start to go. And then when you hear other people saying like, I really like what you're doing, we should do that. Then you, to me, I started kind of like getting outside of the bond, the boundaries of what I felt like was, you know, the dream early on. And I felt like this, okay, well now this is going to be the dream.
Got it.
This is where the dream's going. And, not that I, and not that in that first stage of, you know, the birth of the dream, when it comes to with your relationship with God, not that you don't love God and not that you don't trust God and not that you don't believe in Jesus and not that you don't praise him, not that you don't, you know, try to live your life, in reflection of who he is. Not that any of that wasn't true. It all was true, mm-hmm. but there was something much deeper waiting for me that I had no clue about. Mm. And, so like, that's like the early on idea of that living, you know, the dream, the birth of the dream stage. But, we've talked about, a guy named George Mueller before, the three of us, we've talked about him quite a bit. And so when I was in Kentucky is the first time I went through Experiencing God, and Henry Blackaby, who wrote Experiencing God, mentions George Mueller several times. Yeah. And like, so here I was, gosh, what was that? Probably 96. I'm 26, 27 years old. And I'm reading this about this dude named George Mueller and how he started this orphanage in England and how they lived like day to day, trusting God would provide and really having no money. And a lot of times, like they would sit down, as we said before, they would sit down with the kids to eat breakfast. And there was no breakfast. Yeah. They didn't have anything. And then all of a sudden there's a knock at the door and there's like a milk, you know, wagon is broken down in front of their stuff. And they're like, this milk's going to go bad. Yeah. Y'all want it? Sure.
The orphans, yes.
And then like all of a sudden some dude like delivers bread. He's like, hey, this is wrong delivery, but we can't take it back here. Okay. I mean, that stuff like happened all the time. So like for me, in that stage of like living the dream or, you know, living that birth of the dream, I am looking though at like where I am is good, but knowing that there's another. You know, there's another stage to this.
Okay.
And that's because like, man, George Mueller is living a life where he's trusting God. I mean, he's literally trusting God, you know, like all the stories that we see in the Bible, you know, I mean, it's like biblical levels of trust and typically that we don't have or don't really portray in our culture. Really.
So your feeling was what I'm doing now is good, but it's not good enough.
Yeah. I knew that there was it was good, but there was a potential that I needed to go more.
Okay.
Not that I needed to do more, but that there's a potential of like, this isn't it.
Hmm.
Right. Like it's almost like foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Right. A foreshadowing of like, hey man, you think this is the dream. Right. What you're doing is this is what God has created for you.
Right.
This is the dream.
Yeah.
The reality is like this is probably more of your dream than it is God's dream.
Got it. Okay.
And I'm going to give you a little snapshot of this dude named George Mueller.
Okay.
And he's living God's dream.
Got it.
So that's where the birth of the dream, the death of the dream, the resurrection of the dream is. It's like the birth of the dream is just what you think you're supposed to be doing for God. And not that youth ministry wasn't what I should have been doing at the time, but in my mind, closing it off, I was like, this is me. This is who I am. This is my identity. This is what I do. Mm-hmm. That is the more of a man-made dream.
So looking back, it feels like it was more of what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And less of you asking God.
But
where are we going? Where are you already working? And how can I join you?
Because I think a lot of times, for probably 99% of the people, it is like the dream that we want is usually wrapped up in good intentions with God.
It is.
Of course, right? Like, that's why it's not like everything you're doing, it wasn't like apart from God.
No.
But most of the times, we aren't thinking, oh, the dream is actually me being completely reliant on God, having to like be patient.
Right.
And wait,
right.
Have him provide and me just like follow and obey.
Yeah.
And right.
Yes.
Which is like no one thinks that is me like killing it.
Right? Yes.
Right. Even though we do see that on paper, like George Mueller, I'd be like, oh yeah, great. But I'm gonna make sure I don't. Like that's like a bad version of having to trust God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Versus me doing 50% of the work, him doing 50% of the work.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's like the backseat driver, right? It allows God to get them to a specific destination they think is the destination.
Yeah.
And they go, thanks God, I got it from here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you switch seats, and that's what I had done.
Mm.
I had you know, as a 30-year-old, started to believe this was what I was put on this planet to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is like what we talk about a lot is that you're, and we just said this a couple episodes ago and in the So They Say series was that, you know, living God's dream is just abiding in him. And that's it. That's mm-hmm. the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing something for him or figuring it out as quickly as possible, what my role is, but when the reality is the roles are, you know, leader and follower.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point I was like, and I think everybody does this. I would guess, is that yes, it's very well intentioned. And I do believe God led me to this, to that position. Where that kind of went off the rails a little bit, as far as like not realizing whose dream this is, mm-hmm. is when I go, thanks God, I got it from here. Mm-hmm. And now I'm leading it.
Mm-hmm. When did that happen?
Probably, I would say when I was in Kentucky, because like I said, that Indiana one, that first one in Terre Haute was just so like, get me out of here. And I was very impatient. I took like the first little thing that came about and, you know, just did it. I mean, you know, young and dumb, right?
Sure.
Just,
how old
were
you?
I don't know. I was probably 23, 24.
Yeah. Okay.
I made $19,000 a year.
In the crazy. Bank, baby.
Well, back then.
Yeah. Back then, it was a lot. I guess it was a lot. I don't remember.
In the middle of nowhere.
It was just
Kentucky
me.
Kentucky or Indiana.
Yeah, it was me. And yeah, I probably was okay. But I don't know. But I tell the girls that every once in a while. They're like, oh, my God. But I think when I went to Kentucky and I really experienced like my first real success of doing the things that I really wanted to mm-hmm. do, what was mentored to me and what was modeled for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing it and it was working. And I'm like, ah, okay. Now this is more like it. And then started doing that. And then when I went to Georgia and still doing the same thing, pretty much working. So that was more like affirmation that, yeah, this is it. And even after taking off, you know, like whatever it was, the 6 months, 7 months or whatever, and being in a, you know, missing it badly.
Mm-hmm.
And then going back into Fortville and just, again, just doing the same stuff really. And having success. It just was, you know, that's why probably I felt like going into church planning was the next thing, because you start to kind of look at like, you know, certain things as God things. And you start, it's your own affirmation. You're affirming mm-hmm, yourself
mm-hmm,
really.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of taking any time or spending any kind of time in like solitude or prayer or getting around wise people
and
really, you know, allowing it to kind of like soak in,
mm-hmm.
you know, I never really did. I mean, for me, every ministry is like 3 years, right?
What does that mean?
What it means like Terre Haute was not 3 years, but I just needed to get out of there.
Yeah.
But you know, Williamstown was 3 years. Georgia was 3 years. And in Indiana was 3 years. And it wasn't because I wanted to get out of there. It's because like, you know, so I went to Williamstown in Kentucky because so they called me. We went over, we had an interview. They hired me on the spot. Was there, had a great time. George called me.
Mm-hmm.
They flew us down. They took us out to eat. They really showed us
wine and dine.
Yep. They showed us everything. It was great. And I thought, man, this is cool. We got on the flight back. We kind of made a decision. They offered it to us while we were there. And Indianapolis, the same thing. I mean, I didn't go seeking these things. So it's very easy to see. And I do definitely believe that his hand was involved in it. But the problem is that when I think that, you know, that's the dream,
mm-hmm.
That's the dream. And it's like very limited. And it's really mm-hmm. centered more around me than mm-hmm. it is about what is God doing. Mm-hmm. And specifically, like, you know, really wanting to abide with me. Mm-hmm. Aside from a job, aside from the ministry, because right. that can be like super in our minds as ministers, as like official. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like I'm officially a Christian because I'm in the ministry. Look at me. I'm in, you know. And not like you would, you know, like, you know, flaunt that, but that is kind of the, in the back of your
mind. Was it a lot of like proving, like now that I was called to ministry, I have to like, in a good way, the best way possible, mm-hmm. proving to God that you deserve the spot. Hmm. I'm doing the things, God, like, look, I can continue to do them. Isn't this what you want? Isn't this what you want?
Yeah, I don't think it was like proving in that aspect. Okay. I think it was more of like super confident that this is what God had me to do, and he's connected me with what He wants.
So
now he's going to go and connect somebody else, right? I got you covered, Scott. Yeah. You know, things good luck, clicking. Man.
Yeah, yep. Yeah,
good luck. Yeah. I'm kind of still here in spirit in a weird mm-hmm, way, mm-hmm. but you've got this. I'm going to go and help somebody else. Yeah. That's kind of the mentality. Like this is the cul-de-sac, right? Of my whole existence on this planet is that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when it's like Star Wars, as we joked about Star Wars, it's like, honestly, Star Wars, you know, A New Hope can end and not have mm-hmm. a sequel.
Yeah. Standalone.
And stand alone.
Yeah.
Seemingly.
Yeah.
But that's not the end of the story.
Well,
but to everybody in it, it is.
Some would argue that was the original intentions, because why else would like Luke and Leia like hint at a romantic relation. Anyway,
that's a different podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you see what I'm saying? It's like, I'm thinking it's a standalone movie.
Right, right, right.
Instead of there being three phases to, I mean, because this is a process like every human being goes through. Mm-hmm. Every human being goes through at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of like, you know, a loved one dying. You know, you having a life with that loved one pre-death. Mm. Is great. Mm-hmm. And you start to really kind of believe that like, this is it.
This will last forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then that just like shocks everything, shocks the mm-hmm. system. And now you really do mourn it. And then you've got to figure out what's life mm-hmm. like after that. So in every facet of us living life, this process, you know, exists. I mean, Jesus himself even, you know, posterized mm-hmm. this idea, because they wanted him to be a king. And that's the idea. It was like, he came, cool. He's the savior. He has saved us. Hosanna. Then he dies.
What a perfect, I'm just nothing but the Star Wars trilogy. Right. Cause it is A New Hope. Right.
Yeah.
But then the Empire strikes back.
Yep.
But then there comes back the Return of the Jedi.
Right. Right.
But then there's so much layers you can actually use that in every life situation, even like grieving, right? It's just, there's this new opportunity.
Yep.
Then the world hits you.
Yeah.
But then you come back a different person as a Jedi.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yeah. But
not to nerd out. But that's really cool.
Unfortunately though, in the first step, you don't see any of that.
No.
Yeah,
cause it could be a standalone. Naive. Like, oh, we did it. I've arrived.
The end. Yeah. This happy is it. Ending. I get it. Yeah. Yes, I've arrived.
So how old were you when the Empire struck back?
I was 25 or 35 years old.
See, this is my thing too. And I'm going to say this. I have a hard time trusting really young leaders.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
If you're under the age of like 32, before your Jesus year, right? Mm-hmm. 33. I have a hard time trusting
year?
You. Yeah, yeah. If you, especially you can tell people who have the
that still, is funny.
The New Hope.
Yeah.
You know, look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Where
right.
they haven't, they feel like they're really like,
you doing haven't it gone for God. Through anything.
Yeah. 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 And, but there's some young people I do trust, but mm-hmm. they, I feel like there's still like humility and like they still haven't feel like they figured it out.
Yeah.
Right. They're still trying to figure it out, but it's the ones that like, I did it. Mm-hmm. I've arrived.
I know what
this
I'm talking
is exactly
about.
Exactly what God's called me to.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, bro, you have now being almost 40, right?
Yeah.
Like, cause I could see myself with that arrogance as well. Yeah. Like uh-huh. I'm stepping exactly where I'm telling God, like I should be.
Yeah.
Right. And there has to be this next other season. Not have to be, but usually there is.
There is.
But it's really hard for me now trusting
yeah.
these people under the age of like 32.
Yeah.
Anyways.
No, I completely agree because I mean, I was there too. And, yeah. and I'm just saying that's exactly where I was. I thought I was at the pinnacle of my career and yep. I knew everything. Yep. I was super confident. Mm-hmm.
Well, because everything had worked.
Everything worked.
And just kind of like fell into your lap.
Yeah. I didn't go looking for another job. Yep. People wanted me.
So obviously, that's what needs to be happening.
Yeah.
I'm doing the thing the right way.
Yeah, this has got to be.
And God is blessing me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But without you even really considering what God wanted you to do.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I thought this was it.
Yeah.
Until the whole church planning thing kind of snuck in there. That's when I thought like, okay, well, this is now we're going to go to, this is going to morph a little bit.
Yeah.
For the first time in my life, I never even cared or whatever, but this is going to morph into this and we can get rid of the elders. We can get rid of all the people.
Was there any sense of this first dream about to die? Could you see it coming?
No.
It was just out of nowhere.
Now when we moved into Charlotte and I knew very quickly that this was not going to be it.
Okay.
I started talking with, so I mentioned Matt McGew and Matt then tells me, he then tells me this, you know, the birth of a dream, the death of a dream, the resurrection of a dream. And he had gone through it himself. Okay. He was a couple of years older than me, where he was a youth minister for years and something happened. He just got out of ministry and he went and he was like, I don't know what he's doing, selling cars or insurance or something like that. And like a couple of years later, a church in Ohio called him and said, hey, we think you're the guy for the job. Hmm. And he's like, no, that's dead. that's dead. It's gone. Hmm. I appreciate it, but my ministry years are gone. It's dead. It's over. He had come to fully embrace the idea that this was death,
yeah.
you know? And so, but the funny thing is they just were like, No, you don't understand. God's been pointing us in your direction. Hmm. This person and this person, all who know, I mean, he didn't even know these people at all, but he had a trail of people.
Wow.
So God was rebirthing the dream.
Yeah.
So he knew. And as I'm telling him, like, I am in the wrong place. This is not for me. I've moved my family down here. There were warning signs anyway that I should not have taken this job.
Really?
He actually offered me a job with him.
Oh, wow.
And I turned him down to go with the cool guy. Huge mistake.
Never follow the cool guy.
Because he was the wise guy. He was the one that was, when we were talking about what kind of church we're going to plant, he goes, I don't know. We'll just see what God wants to do. I saw that
should be the answer.
Yeah. I saw that as he's unorganized.
Yeah.
He's unprepared. He doesn't even know what he's doing.
He's not a good leader.
Yep. And I went with the guy who was my age. Who had all these like crazy cool ideas, creative, cool. We're going to be this in 5 years and we're going to plant in a warehouse and turn it into all that stuff. Sounded like, yeah, that sounds cool.
So it was kind of intoxicating.
It definitely was
to be invited into that kind of environment.
Yeah. And so for me, but early on reality hit in.
Okay.
Right. Where it's like, you know, he had super high, crazy expectations that were not realistic. And we went with that. But it didn't take very long to realize that a lot of that stuff was not going to happen.
Okay.
We didn't even know the area we were in. You guys know the university area very well. Mm-hmm. We were trying to create a white church in a in a movie theater that had already hosted three other church plants.
Yeah.
But this one will be different.
Yep.
This one will be different. It's going to be way cooler. Yeah. It'll be better
because God told us to.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah. So it didn't take long to realize that. And then me talking with Matt as just like, I just knew I needed a wise counsel to help me figure out because, you know, I had jumped around and I didn't want to just bail because I wanted to bail. I wanted to feel like, God, I'm going to give you some time to figure because now what?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to give God some time to, you know, work, not knowing how much time that really would take.
So is that kind of you admitting, oh, this dream is
defeat,
dying, And were there any moments where you tried to like hold on to that first,
Oh thing? Yeah, no. Oh, absolutely. Okay. No, no, you don't. Maybe I can save that for the next one. Okay. I'll go in deeper, but no, it's the exact same process of, you know, the steps of grief of, you okay. know, of mourning.
Okay.
It's exactly the same. Okay. Exactly the same. So I thought that there was more. I thought this is not
in
over.
Denial.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was not, sense. It was not real. It was more of a like, oh crap. Now what are we going to do? Well, mm-hmm. I don't really want to go back to mm-hmm. old church. I'm not sure I want to go back to youth ministry. Yeah. Let's just keep our options open. Mm-hmm. And, a church plant, you know, a couple year old, I mean, they got a touch with me and like within like a week of me losing my job.
Wow.
Offered me a job in Huntersville, North Charlotte, as an in-house graphic designer. Mm-hmm. They're going to pay me, you know, a little bit more than what my mortgage was. So I'm like, okay, let's just take one step at a time.
Yeah.
So it still was not over.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah,
it was
yeah.
not dead.
So you're saying like your dream was not like just this one ministry job. The dream that was dying was so much bigger than that.
Yeah. To me, the dream, I had just gotten sidetracked from the dream. So let me get back to the dream somehow. I don't want the exact same thing because I was still thinking that church planting was the next stage mm-hmm. Of the dream.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, well, how do I get back into a newer type of church then instead of an older church and maybe not youth ministry? Because, you know, I don't think that's kind of it either. Mm-hmm. I have no clue that this is dead at this point.
See, this is why sometimes I don't like when people rely too much on their calling from yep. God, because yes. then we also kind of fabricate or like manufacture yeah. what that calling
totally.
God is.
Totally.
Because the calling is like, it's going to be at a church. I'm going to be this killer like pastor.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But then like, no, I've called you to ministry.
Right.
But not that.
Right.
Because that isn't the ministry I've called you into. Yeah. Right? But then we are yeah. so fixated on, yep. but I have a call. So I'm all in on this call to be a pastor at a church at this, you know, and that's like, that's not, you've confused, like a title for a calling, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
God,
yeah, yeah.
you think I want the title when mm-hmm. God's like, no, I've called you
and
to something different.
And it's yeah. so easy in America to just like acquire the title.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
you have to do is go to school.
Work for the title. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Get the degree and then yeah. yeah, we'll find a place for mm-hmm. you
yeah.
without really knowing anything about what you're doing.
No, absolutely. It's definitely a prepackaged kind of deal mm-hmm. in our culture.
Yeah.
And it's like, as we've talked about, like the students that try to become a rabbi, only the best, the cream mm-hmm. of the crop mm-hmm. become mm-hmm. students of the rabbi. Mm-hmm. And they know what the future is. They're mm-hmm. going to be a rabbi.
Yeah.
And they're going to do the same things.
Yeah.
So there's really, you know, that's the train that you get on and you just follow the tracks. And so, but for me at that point was like, I got sidetracked. Mm-hmm. So how do I get back on track?
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I would try to figure out the next couple of years.